I'll go home and pack my clothes. You go get your these and those, and away we'll go. Off we're gonna shuffle, shuffle off to Buffalo.
Good morning, Scott Wells here for the Magic Word Podcast, and we are on our way to Buffalo, New York, and then on to Batavia, New York from there, where they'll be hosting the 44th 4F Convention. That's a lot of fours here in 2014. And this is Fechter's Finger Flicking Frolic, the 4F Convention, that is the International Close-Up Invitation-Only Convention, and it's going to be just another heck of a lot of fun, I know. And so during the next few days, I'll be uploading some daily podcasts from the convention site, talking with some of the registrants and kind of giving you a feel and flavor of what it's like actually if you were attending here. If you are not able to make it, you can kind of find out kind of the fun you're missing. And if you are here, that you can kind of tune in and maybe hear some parts that you did miss when you were in the other room or listening to a lecture or sessioning with somebody or something. So I started off this podcast by saying good morning because, golly, it is. Here it is at 4 a.m., and I am sitting at the Hobby Airport in Houston and waiting for Southwest Airlines. It will take me over to Chicago, meet up with Don Weiberg, and then from there, Chicago, on over to Buffalo. And good buddy Mike Siege is going to be picking us up and taking us over to Batavia. What a great guy, and a very good magician also, if you guys don't know him. He used to work with Paul Richards over at the Elmwood Magic. Sorry, I was thinking Elmhurst, Illinois. Elmwood Magic. Big shout out there to Paul. Great dealer, and one of those brick-and-mortar shops that I hope will last for many decades. Another one of the good guys and a good, honest dealer, and has good original products that comes in there, too. Not a sponsor of the podcast here, but then I don't have any sponsors. You know, I kind of depend upon your support. I thank you guys very much for your, for listening and for your financial support from time to time. Those of you who can drop me a few bucks here and there to help defray some of the podcast costs for hosting and domain and everything. I feel kind of like a beggar. Hate to ask for that, but anyhow, thank all of you guys who are the friends of the Magic Word for helping out. But back to the convention. This is going to be a lot of fun. Not sure who all is going to be there. Actually, I am. Glenn Brown always puts together a great PDF. It's a form, schedule, and pictures of what all is going to be happening. And the it used to be that when you'd come to the convention that Obie O'Brien, who is the head forker, and he's called him the head forker because the convention used to be held at the Forks Hotel. And it was really kind of a misnomer. I wouldn't really call it a hotel. I think they had two or three rooms upstairs that they would rent way back when. It's long since passed and burned down and now part of history. But it originated at the Forks Hotel by Eddie Fechter. Hence, that was why he was the head forker, because he was the person who is in charge, really, of putting this all together, he and his staff of guys. Mike Hilberger and now Joe Turner and several guys put this all together, who also act as the masters of ceremonies for the shows. What I was going to say is that Obie used to just tap out people while you were at the convention, saying, "Hey, I want you in the 2 o'clock show there, Scotty, or this evening we're going to have at the, for the 8 o'clock show, I want you to be in here." And so then they kind of figure out who's going to be going in whatever order. So it wasn't until after you got there. It could be that you may not even know until after you got there, because on the back of your name tag it would say, you know, 4 o'clock show or something, and then you're on. And one of the things of attending the 4F convention is that if you are asked to perform, then you must perform. And you can't really hold back anything. Now, that doesn't mean doing a whole act. You just need to do one or two things maybe that they want you to do no more than about 5 minutes, because there are a lot of really top magicians from all over the world who are attending and are performing, and easily any of the attendees could put together or perform a full act very competently. But the idea is just do something that might be one of your pet tricks, pet effects, something that is new that you've been working on that you want to demonstrate and show the rest of the fraternity there. And although I say a fraternity, that denotes that it could be a group of guys. And for the most part, it is. And for a long number of years, it was until seems like was it Bunny Spina, somebody I think it was, who was the first woman I remember coming many years ago. And of course that sex barrier has been broken many years ago by her, and continues to have a lot of really top class women. And I'm looking forward to seeing Mandy Farrell coming over from Bristol. Actually, she lives in Bath. And I know there'll be several others who will be in attendance as well, and they are just tremendous, and they add so much more texture and fun to the whole weekend. And I say weekend, it's almost like a week and kind of a weekend, because here it is on Wednesday, the 23rd of April, and it's going to be a long day getting there as everybody starts to congregate, with some of the activities starting later this afternoon. And I'm going to try to get over to Alex's, and they always have some great garlic ribs. I have them not once, but two nights. Tomorrow night will be Thursday Magic and Martini night, so I'm looking forward to joining up with some guys and having a few martinis, little ribs. And aside from that, golly, there's a lot happening, but I'm not going to take much more time with just kind of letting you know what's going to be happening, because I'm not exactly sure until I pull out my schedule, and we can kind of go through that a little bit later. But I'll see you later when we get over to New York. It's time for me to go over to Dunkin' Donuts, I think, and start to get primed and prepped, because that's one of the things they do. After a certain time, like around 10 or 11 o'clock each evening, Obi breaks out the coffee and donuts, and they just keep on going and sessioning all night long. So I guess I should go and have mine to open my eyes a little bit so I can keep awake. So for now, until we get it over to New York and I shuffle off to Buffalo, this is Scotty L. Well, before I departed the Houston Hobby Airport, I ran into a good friend over here, Gary Plants, who is also on his way, but going to be taking a different flight. He's going by way of Buffalo, whereas I'm going by way of Chicago. I wanted just to chat with him briefly about the Magic Con, Dave and Dan Buck's convention out in San Diego, which you attended and you actually were lecturing in. Is that right? Oh, first of all, hello, Gary. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Scott. It's a little early to be doing something
little,
like this.
A little. What time did you get up, by the way?
I got up at 10 after 4.
I was up at 3 a.m.
No,
You're closer, though.
I don't think I slept at all. You know? But, it was a great convention. Of course, the San Diego weather, you know, how can you go wrong with that?
True.
And, I got to see a lot of old friends. Jim Patton, I joke with him, I see him once every 25 years, and this was the second time. So we spent a lot of time together, and some of the older guys that I remember seeing back in 1978 for the first time. David Roth was there. He performed I think he worked about three different times, gave a couple of shows and a lecture, and Darwin Ortiz was there, and so it was good to see those guys again.
You know, it's kind of funny from what you're saying about seeing some of the older guys, you know, because I think of the Magic Con as being something that's for the next generation, or a couple generations down from us, that are really the younger guys. You know, here we got a lot of the more seasoned professionals, seems like, were the ones lecturing.
They certainly had a wide range of ages.
Yeah.
You know, some... It was amazing to see some of these young fellas. I mean, they looked like they couldn't be over 7 or 8 years old, and they had these cards, and they were manipulating them like crazy. At one point, they were taking a movie. They had about 12 kids lined up in a row based on their size. So they had one on one end was about 3.5 foot tall, and then it went up to 4 foot and 4 foot six, and all the way up, and they were all just standing there doing all their flourishes, and it was quite an amazing thing to see. They've certainly created a whole new branch of magic.
Now, how does this convention differ from others that we attend? I mean, they have evening shows, they have any stage shows, or just all close up, or
no? It's more oriented for my TED Talk type get together. They have people with different interests that they bring in. It's not necessarily, you know, a lecture, magic lecture and a magic show. They may have somebody speaking on lighting or presentation and different things like that.
It's not all trick, trick, trick.
It's not all trick, trick, trick. No, the presentation that I gave wasn't really a lecture per se. I was kind of trying to get people interested in the preservation of magic films and magic, the Doug Henning TV specials, and going all the way back into the 30s. And so I had a a 40-minute presentation that I gave. Basically, it was a bunch of films and videos that I've from my personal collection.
Yeah. I know we've changed some things over the years.
Yeah, I was going to say, we've discussed this before, and I was kind of my good friend Bill Goodwin was there from the Magic Castle, and I spoke to him about what the Magic Castle's doing as far as this is concerned, and it was kind of interesting to get his comments that he doesn't think that any magic shows that's been on TV in the last 10 years are probably not in the Magic Castle library, because it's nobody's job to do that. And so they're not being...
Well, it used to be so much more rare, you know, that you would have these annual specials, you know, on Thanksgiving that Copperfield would do.
Since Copperfield, right.
But now you've got regular series, you know,
and
with
they
so
don't
many
have
people.
Those, right.
Yeah.
No. So,
no,
you know.
Interesting. I mean, they're there in Hollywood where they preserve film and everything. It's wild, wild.
Mm-hmm. Huh. So, you know, I was recommending, you know, the scary thing to me is, you know, that so many people have some of these films on VHS tapes, which are already a thing of the past. You can't hardly find anyone with VHS players. And so, you know, in another 5 years, people are just going to look at a tape and just throw it out because they're not going to have a way of playing
it. I still got Beta.
Well, there you go. And I talked about that, you know, yeah. going all the way back to 16 millimeter film and 8 millimeter with silent. And,
yeah.
And so I think that's a branch of magic history that we may be losing quite a bit of if somebody doesn't take on the job of trying to preserve this. So
but who do you think will pick up that reign?
Uh-huh.
I mean, you're the only person doing it right
no,
now?
No.
There's a fellow out in California, Bill...
McElhaney.
McElhaney.
Yeah. I don't know Bill, but I do know he has quite a collection of magic videos. I believe some of the Miracle Factory videos, DVDs that came out here in the last...
Yeah, Todd.
5 to 10 years with Todd, or some from Michael Haney's collection. But no, I think my recommendation was that, you know, if you have some of this stuff, get it converted digitally, you know, into a good format, and send copies. I recommended sending copies to the Magic Castle, to the Magic Circle, and the SAM Library. That way, if all three of them have copies of the shows, you know, there's a good chance that they're not going to be lost, you know.
That's a good point. You know, I remember Pete Petrashek up in Omaha, Nebraska, was the film librarian for the SAM for a number of years. I think he passed that on to somebody else, but he used to work for a television station there in Omaha. In fact, he had worked at the same station where Johnny Carson got started, so he knew Johnny and had a lot of pictures of him in his early years, you know, behind the camera and stuff. But he was able to, you know, convert film and do that kind of thing because he was a film editor, you know, back there. So he continued on with that for a long number of years. But, you know, you're right about the VHS and the Beta, that it's magnetic tape and it's going to be lost.
Even DVD is on its way out.
That's what I was just about to say. Mm-hmm. Everything changes, you know, that you got to, you know, with my Beta tapes, I mean, they're three generations behind now, you know.
Right.
You need to keep up with whatever the technology is because it's going to be lost, you know.
And those Beta tapes should have been converted 20 years ago, you know, but it's always something. Typically I get, well, you know, I'm going
to
do it. I've got a friend here in Texas, and I've been after him for years to convert. He has some pretty special magic videos on VHS. Well, I'll get to it. You know, eventually I'll get to it. Well, you know, it may be too late by the time he gets to it.
It seems the people who will be the preservationists will be you and me, you know, people who are who do have that passion, you know, for the history and understand that technology from before and converting that and wherever that, because I would think that younger people were not embracing that yet, you know, or had the time.
It was very interesting. I had several very young people come up and tell me how much they appreciated seeing some of the videos that I showed. You know, they never thought they'd ever have a chance to see Paul LaPaul or Larry Gray or some of these magicians that they were able to see. So
there are a few things you see that people post on YouTube from time to time, like, you know, Fred Capps or Cardini or some of the classics, but the ones you just mentioned, for an example, that you don't see.
Right.
And, you know, another thing is I know that a lot of guys don't want to have their acts recorded when they're performing or whomever or wherever that they are. I would think that it should be recorded somewhere just for their own posterity, and because later years they're going to say, well, I wish I would have recorded something or let somebody record it, you know.
Yeah, I always think, you know, I've got this one little 1-minute clip of Max Maleany, and all he's doing is standing and talking to a guy, and it's a silent film. It doesn't even have his voice, and I just think, boy, how wonderful it would be just to have his voice, just to hear him talking, and let alone, you know, his possibility of him being on video somewhere performing some magic.
Right.
So it's always like I love going through these old VHS tapes because occasionally you run across a real gem.
Yeah. Well, that's what I like about, you know, recording these podcasts, like with you and others, that Dodd Vickers has with the Magic Newswire as well, and myself, that people can go back, you know, in future years and look and listen historically to these archives, you know, like whenever that Aldo Colombini had died, you know, recently, like within 24 hours, you know, Dodd called me to say, hey, have you got anything with Aldo? Well, I've been friends with Aldo for so long, we've hung around, you know, with each other, but I've just never had the recorder. I never, and he didn't either, you know. So, kind of regret that we, yep, that's me, that's my flight. Look like that's us. Gary, thank you very much for your time. That was Great
Plants. I'll see you,
we'll see you
later on today up
all right,
in Buffalo.
Buddy. Take care. That was Great Plants. For the Magic Word, this is Scotty out. We have arrived in Buffalo, actually in Batavia, here at the Clarion Hotel Palm Island. Yes. Don't you feel like I'm here with Dan Garrett, by the way. Hey, Dan.
Hello. Welcome like from the south to another southerner.
What are we doing up here in this freezing tundra?
I know. The weather's been crazy. Of course, I've been in Japan for a while, so it's...
What's it like over there?
They have a different word for everything. You know that. So.
It's all Greek to me.
I had a whirlwind lecture tour, and...
A tsunami over there, basically. A tsunami of lectures.
Yeah, that's right. A cyclone, not a whirlwind.
Oh, that's right.
But this was sponsored by Ken Kurita and Shigeo Fudagawa, and I did like 13 lectures in 12 days.
Oh, my gosh.
I did the last 3 days. I did 2 lectures a day, so I did 6 lectures in 3 days. The last 3 days over there. I worked my butt off, and I loved it. I wouldn't have it any other way, so it was a great time.
And how many people showed up at your lectures?
Well, more than one and less than 200. But most of them were around, like lectures in the States. They vary from about the low end 15 to the high end about 40.
Well, the amazing thing is obviously that it's a tightly packed area. I mean, it's so dense that you don't have so far to drive or take the subway or public transportation,
right,
I assume?
We took the train everywhere and the occasional taxi, but mostly the train. And in Tokyo alone, I had like 3 or 4 lectures just in Tokyo. It's so big. So there are many magic groups in Japan.
And that comes to the interpretation. How did that work out for that person or people interpreting your lecture?
Oh, it was all Shigeo Fudagawa, who is a wonderful magician.
Of course.
A great teacher. And he translated my notes into Japanese. And he was my traveling companion, and we... riding the train with me, and he always made sure I got off to the right place most of the time. We didn't have any mishaps. We didn't miss any lectures, but there were a couple of close calls.
Like, for an example?
Being on the wrong platform and having to run with all my crap to the next platform to get on the right train just in time.
I was talking with Garrett Thomas about lecturing over in France, and he was saying that basically just plan on your lecture being twice as long because you have to say it and then wait for them to interpret it over there. So is that kind of the same situation?
This is true, although I shorten the things that I say so that it takes into account. So mine's only about 25% longer.
Okay.
I cut out tricks instead.
Yeah.
I will be doing a very long lecture. The 1st of June I'll be doing the Penguin Live lecture online, Penguin Live, which is... everybody knows about.
That's right. And this is the first time you've probably done a Penguin lecture, I guess?
Yes, it is. It is.
Hold on. You guys getting ready to go someplace?
Yeah.
Okay. Gene?
Are you coming to dinner with us?
I am going to dinner with you,
okay.
Yeah.
But you can't use your microphone.
I won't record you. I know you don't like to be online. You don't like
to. So this is dinner arrangements going out to the world via the Internet.
That's right. So we were going with Gene Anderson and Mike Hilberger?
Yes.
Okay. And you and me?
Yes.
And who was the fifth?
Chris Pillsworth and his friend Jean-Luc.
So there's 6, so it's not 5.
Six.
Okay, okay,
six.
Gotcha. Okay.
You
good.
Are the 6th.
I'm the 6th.
Yes.
That's my lucky number, by the way.
Yes.
Has nothing to do necessarily with Japanese. So the Japanese lecture tour, and then you're going to be doing the Penguin Live lecture again. The date is June the 1st. The 1st, okay. And if you subscribe to that, you'll be able to get it. If not, you should go and get it, because then you'll have it in your archive. You can download it
and
watch it forever.
It.
It's like $20 or something?
Right, if you miss it, whatever, they charge $20, $30.
Yeah.
$29.95.
Okay.
Plus no tax.
And your lecture will be, what is it, about 2 hours?
And normally it's about 2.5 hours. It'll be over 3 hours because they want me to do more.
Yeah,
we give a bang for the buck.
seems like I remember, I think Richard Osterlin did like 4 or 5 hours or
there
something.
There are people who do that. I don't have the stamina. You know, I'm an old guy like you now.
Yeah, that's right. Welcome to the old guy club.
I've always said, we go around and looking around, where are all the old people at the conventions anymore? And we look to each other and say, it's us. Yeah. We're the old guys.
It's like what Pogo said.
Yeah. I've met the enemy. We have met the enemy and they are us.
And people are saying, who's Pogo? Go back and look that up. Yeah. Google P-O-G-O, Pogo.
Who are the Rolling Stones? What is that?
Yeah, remember Paul McCartney used to be with a group called Wings?
Yeah, that's right. He used to be, but he was with a group before Wings. Somebody said that on the radio the other day.
Funny. So this was not your first trip in Japan. You have been there on...
This is my fifth visit to Japan.
Wow. And with an all-new lecture.
Yes, all brand-new lecture. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which I've been doing for about a year and a half since I wrote it.
Yeah.
This is a lecture that I've
This is Back to the Future, the one that you did
Forward Into the Past.
Right.
It ends in Back to the Future, that's right.
Yep. And John Miller. Hey, John.
Hey, Scott.
Great to see you. Give me a hug there, man.
Okay.
It's been a long time.
I'll tell you guys
Good
something.
See
Joe's emceeing tonight.
Yes. Joe Turner is emceeing the evening show.
Right. We're going to meet in the lobby.
And that's going to be, I think, for the 8 o'clock show. And that's going to be in the main showroom. Looks like everybody's kind of congregating over here. So we're kind of making, as you heard earlier, dinner plans to go over to Alex's and have some ribs and get primed for tomorrow night, for Thursday night's Magic and Martini night. So, again, there are a lot of folks who are all just checking into the hotel here at the Clarion Hotel. Palm Island, and as far as the rest of the lecture tour or the States, are you going to be doing something after the Penguin lecture?
No, they're flying me up to Columbus just for that and back, and then I hit the Crystal Cruise Line and do another cruise ship for the Magic Castle at Sea program.
I understand that there are a lot of other magicians who have done that, Joe Turner and some others.
Yes, with, yes.
Yeah. Speaking of the castle, I just got booked this last week.
Well, congratulations.
Jack called me. I'll be back out there June the 2nd through the 8th.
Good. You get Jack to return your emails. That's more than I can get.
Well, yeah, I yes.
That's great.
Let's see. What else I was going to say? Oh, and also, you were talking about on Penguin Live, you're going to be doing the lecture. I've got a thing on Full Circle Magic that I'll be doing a online live interview chat kind of a thing on May the 3rd. It's Saturday. I think it's 1:30 Eastern time. Have you done that with them?
No, yet? I haven't. But I'm going to say, if you're listening to this podcast in your car, pull over and mark your calendars right now before you forget.
Yeah. For both of those
things. That's
days.
Right. Both
those there we go. All right. Well, it's going to be fun. And there's Joe Turner right now. He's on the phone. So he's going to be our MC for the later show. Okay. We're going to go over there now? Okay. Well, it's time for dinner. Okay. We're on our way. So from 4F First Day, that was Dan Garrett. And this is Scotty F. Well, the day one is not quite yet over. I guess I should say that we had something different. We had a gala opening show and then a lecture. And now just having some pizza and donuts pretty soon and more things kind of going on this evening. But you can't have the convention, of course, without the head chief forker himself, Obie O'Brien. Hey, Obie.
How are you doing, Scotty? Good to see you.
Good to see you, and thank you again for the 44th annual. So this is a pretty important one.
Yes, I think it is, and even next year, 45, every 5 years is a sort of anniversary year.
Yeah.
And I can't believe that I've done it for 44 straight years right now.
I was about to ask you that question. Does that seem kind of amazing? I
mean, oh, yes, it is,
really. Has it gone pretty fast, though?
Oh, yeah, it has, and there's lots of good memories in the last 44 years.
What stands out? I mean, you know, you have different people each year, and...
Well, it stands out when we were at the Forks Hotel with Eddie for the first few.
Yeah.
And then Del Rey came, and... All kinds of other guys came. Tamarez came 3 times, and Jay Marshall, and all those guys.
Yeah.
Sid Lorraine, you know. Wow.
And the roasts we used to have, you know, were just
right.
off the wall. They were just crazy fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So rather than having a roast now, we sort of just have
an honor.
Tribute, to the guest of honor. But most of the time, the guys try to do something that's funny with the guest of honor.
Yeah.
Will happen to Saturday night.
And this year, of course, it's going to be Sean Farquhar.
Correct.
And you had picked these out. You were the honoree for the 40th, I think. Is that the right?
That's correct, 2010.
Yeah. And then you had selected, like, the next 5 years.
Correct.
Okay. And last year was Steve Bagazzi, and next year is going to be Oscar Munoz.
That's right. Next year's Oscar Munoz.
And do you know beyond that?
Well, I don't know beyond that because... My wife says we should make the 45th the last one and stop it, but I don't know.
Too close to the 50th.
I know.
That's a magic number.
That's exactly right. That's what I got to convince her.
Yeah.
Because she says I'm spending too much time doing all this stuff.
Yeah. Well, you've spent 45 years doing it, 44 years, of
You're
course,
right.
I've been doing it all the time. And as it's developed, you know, it started off, for those people who are listening to this, just to kind of learn more about what the 4F is about, can you kind of give it in a synopsis, I mean, you know, kind of from beginning to end or, you know, beginning to current,
well,
how they got started, et cetera?
Well, when we started with Eddie, Eddie said, you know, we got
Eddie Fechter, by the way.
Yeah.
This is where Fechter's finger flicking probably comes from.
Yeah. Right. And Eddie said, you know, we ought to have a convention just for the close-up guys to get there and talk and everything else. He says, all these conventions are for stage shows and people to see and so on. He said, the close-up guys get the nothing. So I said, that's a good idea. So I sent out 100 letters. We got 35 guys the first year. Then we had it at Eddie's place. Then we had about 70 the second year. Then 99 the third. And then I tried to keep it under 100, but we used to end up anywhere between 125 and 135.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
And Eddie's place was the Forks Hotel, by the way.
Correct.
And it really was a misnomer. It was being a hotel. It was really
it was a hotel at the turn of the century.
Yeah.
So there was four or five rooms upstairs, and Eddie converted two of them where he lived.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you had about 110, 120 people or so that were up in that hot box. We just had the window open, letting the cool air.
Right. You say, well, I have 100, but Eddie used to invite 15 people.
Okay.
So that sometimes it was 18 or 19, but I kept 15 slots open for professionals like Tamarez or Jay Marshall or something like that,
mm-hmm.
that could come at the last minute.
Right.
And so between the 15 that I had open and the 15 or 18 that Eddie had, that's how you come up around 130. And that's the most that the room could hold upstairs.
Right. And there were some people who stayed downstairs and just kind of hung out and were performing.
Yeah, right. Then after the shows, the guys would go downstairs and perform for the public, which was a great thing.
One of my great memories, I guess, was the fish fry on Friday nights. You know, we go back to the kitchen and they let us, load up the plates with their Friday fish fries.
Yes, that was the best thing we had every Friday night at 4F. Starting in 1971, Eddie had a fish fry,
yeah.
and they came from all over, you know what I mean? So the
yeah.
guys at 4F, they would eat at 5 o'clock, and the public would eat maybe at 5:30, 6 o'clock, and so on.
And that was certainly the best deal in town. I should say the best convention price ever, and I think you told me, don't tell people that, but it was at the time it was like $35 that included your registration and your dinner and everything, and
that's
beer. It's like, don't tell people that, Scotty.
Well,
at the time,
I
yeah.
think today it still is. I mean, for...
Still a great deal.
Yeah, for $160, I feed them two big dinners on Friday night and Saturday night,
mm-hmm.
and a lunch on make-your-own sandwiches and soup and stuff that on Saturday noon. And I got free beer starting on noon on Friday. It goes all day Friday till 2 in the morning.
And sodas, too, for people.
Oh, yeah. That's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
In the hospitality, my hospitality room, I have donuts, coffee, and soft drinks.
Yeah. I don't see how that you can possibly turn a profit. I mean, this has been a labor of love from the beginning, I'm sure.
Exactly. And I don't want to turn a profit. I mean, I shouldn't say that. But, you know what I mean? You make a few dollars, but in every 5 years, I give a lot. Prizes away a lot of goodies for 4F.
You do, yeah.
Yeah, and I lose money every 5 years, but anything that's left over, I sell in the next couple of years and get my money back.
Right.
So,
I know in past years we've gotten close-up pads and decks of cards and watches and keychains.
Yeah,
all
that kind of stuff, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. And so, you know, this was as built as the original close-up convention, and there are others that seem to be, you know, having other close-up conventions. Are you looking at making any kinds of changes? I mean, this has developed such that it's grown from being a U.S. thing, U.S. and Canada, since we're close to Canada, to expanding internationally. And, of course, I know we have a lot from other countries, but are there any plans for any kinds of changes or making this bigger or keeping it the same?
No, keep it the same, but... Because a lot of people know me as the 4F man, that I get invited to, like a couple of weeks, I'm going to Taiwan,
mm-hmm.
And last year I was in Shanghai and Korea and all that, and I go looking for close-up guys that'll come to the convention, and that's how I find them. Oh, you saw two good Koreans.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, so two Taiwans tonight, and the Koreans are on later.
Yeah. So. I'll give the numbers later because I've got that of the list of all the different countries and number of people who are there.
Well, I think there's 17 countries.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Five continents, 17 countries. Mm-hmm. There's only about 150 North Americans, and then the other, maybe 85 or so are from outside of North America.
Well, it is a prestigious thing because I notice whenever I have toured in other countries that magicians wear their 4F pin proudly wherever you go, you know.
Yeah, and I do a lot of little things like the first time you perform at 4F, you get a bachelor's degree in magic, and the second time you get a master's degree, the third time you get a PhD, and I've gone to France, Germany, Switzerland, China, Japan, and so on, and I go in a guy's room, and they're posted on the wall.
Yeah,
framed.
Got mine framed.
Yeah, well, a lot of the guys have them framed.
Yeah.
You know, it's really funny for me to walk in, and first thing I see in the go is this magic room.
It's got your name on it.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, again, there have been a lot of good memories and everything, and those with Eddie, and Eddie died in 79?
Yep, March 31st,
79. Yeah. And have you seen anybody quite like him who had...
No, he had the charisma that he wanted to entertain, and he knew how to entertain. And I mean, there's all kinds of stories I could tell you. But one of the best stories that I think I tell guys is that Michael Skinner and I are sitting there with Lou Gallo on a Friday night at the Forks Hotel. This is about 1972. And Skinner said to Eddie, "You're the luckiest guy in the world to get the person to put their finger on the top card of the deck." And Eddie says, "I'm not lucky." He said, "I can tell you when they can do it." And Skinner says to him, "You can tell us?" And he said, "Yes, I can tell you." He said, "If you can," he said, "I'll drink my beer and go home." So the first thing you know, it's about midnight, and a whole bunch of policemen from across the street come in, and he's entertaining a policeman. And he walks over to Skinner, and he says, "You see the guy in the middle?" Skinner says, "Yeah, he's going to take the top card with his finger. Watch." Right? So he goes over and does the trick, and he says, "Reach in, touch any card. The card that you touch will be the card that you pick. I've done it 1,000 times, never missed." The guy says, "Oh, yeah," and he jumps right on the top card. Eddie turns around and goes, waves his hand and says, "Goodbye, Michael."
That can only come from experience and performing over and over and over and knowing you're...
Exactly, exactly.
And he was always at the bar every night because he owned the place and worked it. And there were a lot of other people who hung out at the bar who worked there, like Carl Norman and...
Ray Mertz.
Ray Mertz, that was the name I was trying to know.
Billy Oakle, who helped helped me start the 4F the very first year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, lots of other guys, many.
And the guys who are on your board of directors now include?
Mike Hilberger's one that used to work at the Forks, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have Joan Caesar's my executive assistant. And I have Glenn Brown, who's our, computer man.
Guy, yeah.
Yeah, and Mariette is my webmaster. And who did I miss?
Phil Wilmore.
Oh, yeah, Phil Wilmore's still on, yeah. But he's been really quiet in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So I think I got them all. No, Jimmy Selinsky's also.
Jimmy C,
He came, light and video. Yeah, he came. He does the sound, the light, and the video. He came on last year or the year before.
Mm-hmm.
I think last year was his first year.
Going back to some of the roasts and things, I remember Jay Marshall, I guess most particularly, you know, and Tom Mollico was just a great roast.
Yep.
Which was the time, I think, that... by the time that he spoke, everyone had all kinds of gay jokes that they were talking about and roasting him at the time. And he said, "Well, if you didn't know before, you know now."
That's right.
I guess this is it.
Yep. And the first time Jay Marshall came, we used to hold it upstairs over the bar. And you had to walk up about 24 stairs to get upstairs into the room upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And Jay Marshall walked up the stairs, then dropped down to his knees, and with the beer in his hand walked in, crawling on his hands and knees, he said, "I got my money back for my registration and beer money."
Yeah.
Yeah, and he always had a great joke, you know. And,
oh, yeah.
And Howie Schwartzman, another one,
yep.
Seems like that always stand up, and if there was always a little lull, you know, you'd point to Howie, say, time for a joke.
Yep.
Just like that, have one.
Well, Jay was the very same way. I always told him to stand by.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if somebody needed an extra 1 minute or 2 minutes to set up, I'd get Jay over to come tell a joke or Howie to come over and tell a joke.
Yeah, either, both those guys, seems yep. like they were fantastic at ad-libbing, at joke a minute, you know.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Well, we thank you very much, and that if I get a chance to catch you at the end of this, to kind of have a quick wrap and let me hear your comments to see how if this met your expectations.
Okay, it's good to have been talking to you, and I hope you guys listening out there found something out about 4F.
Oh, one quick question then, for those who do want to know about getting to 4F, you want to explain how that you can get an invitation to that?
Well, in order to get an invitation, you have to have two sponsors, and those two sponsors have to be people that have come to 4F before.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they sponsor you, normally you have to send me in a video or a DVD or a Mimeo, whatever they call it now, and I have 3 or 4 people look at it and say, okay, you're qualified to come.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody wants to come, and if you don't do a real good performance in magic, you don't get invited back.
Right. And I think I've heard you say before that sometimes you've had people who have vouched for someone, but the person who they're vouching for never makes that last step to send you the request saying, hey, I want to come.
That's right.
So they got to make sure they contact you also.
That's correct. Yep.
Yeah. And then that just assures them of being on a waiting list. That doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be getting an invitation.
That's very true. You brought up a very important point there. If I have everybody that has never been here before goes on a waiting list, and the guys that have been to 4F before have first chance to come. So the guys that have been to 4F before send me their money by December 31st, and then I have a waiting list. Like this year, the waiting list, I think, was about 39 or 40.
Mm-hmm.
And as somebody, the real 4Fers that were here before, if they tell me they can't come, I take one guy from the waiting list and put him, say he can come.
Mm-hmm.
And like that. So that's how I sort of bring in the new people.
And so this year you got how many people?
24 new ones.
Okay. There you go. So if you guys are interested in coming, that's what you need, the process you kind of need to go through. So thank you guys very much for listening, and thank you, Obi.
Okay, Scott, good talking to you.
Great.
And I hope you had fun.
We're having a great time. It's the first day of many. So for the magic word, that was Obi O'Brien. This is Scotty out.